Welcome back to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Where New England gets its electricity has changed dramatically in the past two decades, and that change continues. The use of oil and coal has declined sharply, and renewables like wind and solar are growing. But natural gas has really taken center stage. It used to provide less than a fifth of our energy, and that number is now close to half and continuing to grow. But natural gas is controversial. Proponents argue it's cleaner than other fossil fuels and a necessary step along the path to a lower carbon energy system. Others say it's still a fossil fuel and we could and should skip that step altogether. It's a debate that's played out over the past several years in Salem, where a controversial gas-fired power plant is replacing an old coal-fired power plant. And now it's playing out in Sandwich, where Conservation Law Foundation and local environmental groups are challenging a plan to add a 350-megawatt gas-powered turbine to NRG's power plant on the Cape Cod Canal. So, what does the future of our energy system look like? Nobody has a crystal ball, of course, but MIT's Energy Initiative has done a deep dive and produced a series of reports on the future of our electricity system. Frank O'Sullivan is lead author of both the 2011 Future of Natural Gas Study and the 2015 Future of Solar Energy Study. He's director of research at the MIT Energy Initiative, a senior lecturer with the Sloan School of Management, and a member of the U.S. National Academy's Roundtable on Science and Technology for Sustainability. Frank, welcome to Living Lab Radio.
Hi, Heather. It's a pleasure to be here.
All right. Your report on the future of natural gas was released in 2011 and predicted that natural gas would grow in importance. But did you expect the kind of growth that we've seen in the past six or so years?
In a nutshell, no. I think that when colleagues and I produced that report, it was very clear that the role of natural gas in the U.S. energy mix, in electricity generation and so on, was changing and was changing in a manner that was going to see gas play a larger and larger role. But over the past 5 years, I think the role has increased faster than most observers would have expected. We see that playing out as we speak here in Massachusetts, as you mentioned in your opening remarks, with the dramatic displacement of other fuels by natural gas specifically.
And what's driving that expansion, that explosive growth?
So I think at a very basic level, what has driven the growth in the use of gas across the nation, and certainly here in Massachusetts, is the fact that natural gas today is much cheaper than it was a decade ago. It's so cheap, in fact, that in most parts of the country today, natural gas is a cheaper fuel to burn to generate electricity than coal. Which is really quite remarkable, something that, as I said, was inconceivable a decade ago. And of course, all of this has really emerged because over the past decade, the so-called shale resources have been opened up, and they have dramatically altered our perspectives of both the scale and the cost of domestic natural gas resources in the United States. 10, 15 years ago, this part of the world, the US and certainly New England, was planning for a future where natural gas was going to be a player, but much of that natural gas was expected to actually be imported from foreign suppliers. Since then, all of the facilities actually that we have built to, or that we did build to import that gas, have stood idle. And several of them have actually been turned around to export natural gas. And again, these are kind of unprecedented dynamics in the kind of context of the US and global energy system. I should also add that along with the kind of change in the economic envelope associated with gas versus its traditional competitor coal in the electricity market, we've also seen over the past decade, and certainly over the past 5 years, a tremendous acceleration in the adoption of renewables, wind and solar, across the country, and of course here in Massachusetts. And those resources They come with certain characteristics that are slightly different from a traditional generation. They're what we call non-dispatchable. So, in other words, we can't really predict, obviously, when the sun is going to shine or when the wind is going to blow. And that adds a degree of variability into generation from those types of resources. And natural gas as a fuel is now being used increasingly to support the integration of these renewable resources, because gas generation technology is a more flexible type of generation. We can turn it on and off much faster than you could with a coal plant or a petroleum plant, for example. And that allows the gas generation to fill in holes that are left, say, for example, if a cloud passes by and reduces the output from a solar farm, or, you know, the wind is becalmed for a period of time.
I'm talking with Frank O'Sullivan. He's the director of research at the MIT Energy Initiative and lead author of that group's reports on the future of both natural gas and solar power. You're talking about using natural gas, to meet spikes in demand or sudden drops in the supply, perhaps, of renewables. But natural gas has also really been touted as something called a bridge fuel, that it's still a fossil fuel, as you alluded to, but somehow cleaner and maybe part of getting us toward a more low-carbon energy system, shy of full renewables, entirely solar or wind-based energy system. What does it mean that natural gas is a cleaner fossil fuel, though?
Right. The vision or the view that natural gas is a bridge fuel or a cleaner fossil fuel is really rooted in the fact that the gas molecule itself contains fewer carbons per hydrogen than is the case in coal. And so when we combust it, when we burn it, for a given unit of heat and electricity, therefore, we produce fewer CO2 molecules. In fact, roughly speaking, the ratio is 2-1. So gas produces about half as much CO2 per unit of electricity generated than does coal. So any transition in the electricity generation mix from coal to natural gas will yield a very significant reduction in CO2 emissions.
In your 2011 report, you actually predicted that a combination of energy efficiency measures and replacing coal-fired plants with gas-fired plants could bring up to a 50% reduction in our greenhouse gas emissions, specifically carbon dioxide emissions. But that's really just the burning of it, right? I mean, some research since that time has kind of called into question the lifespan carbon footprint of natural gas, whether it's methane leaks when it's being transported by pipelines or the carbon footprint of fracking. How does the carbon footprint, if you look at that whole lifespan of natural gas, compare to other fossil fuels?
As you point out, over the past, let's say, half decade, there has been a much greater focus on understanding the real end-to-end value chain life cycle carbon intensity of natural gas. And what's become very evident is that along with the benefits we gain in terms of reducing carbon at the power plant level, through the use of natural gas, we're also in all likelihood seeing emissions of methane itself, the actual main molecule in natural gas, through leaks and so on in various parts of the system. And those leaks have a negative impact from a climate perspective, because methane is a very powerful greenhouse gas. There remains a good deal of kind of controversy, frankly, about the scale of the leaks and so on. And, there is, of course, I think, two sides to the debate. I think on one side, there is concern that leaks are The level of leakage is very, very high and is absolutely eliminating the benefit that we achieve from burning gas at power plant versus coal. On the other hand, I think there's a narrative suggesting that this is a very minor issue and so on. Almost certainly the true answer is somewhere in between, and that the natural gas value chain, the pipelines and so on, really need to be addressed, and leaks there need to be managed if natural gas is to really play a role in helping to kind of reduce the CO2 footprint of fossil-based generation in the electricity system.
I mean, you said if, like that was kind of a big if. So do you see natural gas as a way to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions? Do we even need this bridge fuel of natural gas, or could we just leapfrog that step and go straight to renewables?
That is a complicated question, to be honest. Here's where the rubber really meets the road. For the past few years, solar and wind were really growing from a very low base in terms of their overall role on the system. And so you're able to integrate those technologies reasonably effectively when they only generate a small proportion of the overall generation need. But we're now, because of the success of those technologies, getting to a point in certain places, perhaps not yet in Massachusetts, but certainly in states like California, where the role of wind and solar, the scale of wind and solar generation is such that it's really having a meaningful impact on how the rest of the electricity system works. And in particular, it's really placing demands on the other types of generation fleet that we rely on, that many of them weren't really designed to meet. And that raises some real questions about how do we ensure that we can continue to have reliable electricity service into the future. We're going to have to add things like storage. We're almost certainly going to have to build new transmission capacity because wind and solar is often remote from the load. And we're also going to have to look much more carefully and thoughtfully at managing what we call demand. So within the home and so on, having devices that are more dynamic and that are switching on and off more effectively. And this is going to take time. And so I think you coming back to your original question about the bridge, what we're going to see is an outcome that is somewhere between, on the one hand, you know, gas is going to be this kind of lion's share of the system into the future, and that is the bridge that people feel excited about and we'll figure it out in 20 or 30 years' time, versus, on the other hand, we're going to transform the system to a fully renewable-centric system in the next few years. Neither of those two outcomes are really feasible. And actually what you're seeing is that the combination of these technologies is beginning to kind of come together sensibly in many places. And we're beginning to understand how to bring them together sensibly so that we can continue to grow and accelerate the amount of zero carbon technologies, so wind and solar, but at the same time continue to deliver the reliability, the resiliency and so on. That's really crucial for the power system to deliver from a broad energy service provision point of view, from an economic development point of view and so on.
That's Frank O'Sullivan. He's director of research at the MIT Energy Initiative and lead author of that group's reports on both the future of natural gas and solar power. Frank, thanks so much.
It was a pleasure, Heather. Thanks a million.
Next week, the ropes on lobster pots are killing whales, but there are people working on it.
The holy grail of solutions for this is to take traps from the seafloor to the sea surface without using ropes.
That's next time on Living Lab Radio. In the meantime, you can connect with us on Facebook and Twitter. I'm Heather Goldstone. Thanks for listening.
Living Lab Radio is produced by WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio in Boston. It's produced by me, Elsa Partan, and Heather Goldstone is executive producer. Funding for Living Lab Radio comes from the Candida Fund, investing in transformative leaders and ideas. Theme music by Stellwagen Symphonette.